Welcome to the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast. Here, we speak with extraordinary games industry professionals and listen to their story to learn all about what they've built and who they are. GamesNet Berlin Europe is the international games industry initiative of MediaNet Berlin Brandenburg, the networking association for the media, creative and digital industries in Germany's capital region. My name is Simon Oler, and I will be your host for this program. Today, Florian and I are speaking with Johanna Pirke. Johanna is a game designer and a researcher, and she does a million things. You will hear it in our intro in just a moment. And so we quickly figured out that we should speak about how it is like to live a life as a person with many interests and also staying productive like that. And so we talk a little bit about Johanna's work. We talk about educational games. We talk about the magic of academia. We talk about lectures on Twitch and how you can do that if you're an educator, and the things to look out for and the things that are great about it. And then we kind of segue into Johanna's story, how she grew up, and what it is like to live, as we call it, a scattered person, a multifaceted person, a person of highly diverse interests, let's say. And, well, how to be successful like that as well. So if you feel like that, because I feel like that, and I know Florian feels like that, then this episode is definitely going to be for you. And we hope you enjoy that. If you like, you can subscribe to this podcast on whichever platform you like to listen to your audio on. And with that said, let's jump into our conversation with Joey Pirke.
Hello and welcome to the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast. Today with Johanna Pirke, actually Dr. Johanna Pirke, who is an assistant professor, a software engineer, and a researcher at the Graz University of Technology, where she also leads the Game Lab with a staff of 13 people and around 30 students. She wrote a master's thesis during a research visit at MIT, working on collaborative virtual environments. She wrote her doctoral dissertation on motivational environments. She has worked at Electronic Arts before. Her research fields are AI, data analysis, immersive environments like VR, games research, and many more. She also organizes the annual Game Dev Days in Graz since 2016, which are, and I quote, free admission, but to compensate, visitors also get free food, which to me is one of the best event pitches I've ever heard. She was on the Forbes list, 30 under 30, of science professionals, and has received numerous other awards and honors. And she's the keyboarder in a rock band.
And today we will talk about focus.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome, Joey, which we will call you today as it's more personal. And yes, so you are a woman of long introductions, and you're wearing multiple hats, which is always interesting to start a conversation about. But let's ask yourself, how are you today, and what is important to you at the moment?
Yeah, thank you so much for this invitation. I'm super happy to be here. I am good. The weather is nice in Graz right now. So this is always something which makes me definitely feel better because just to already answer your next question, what is important to me, to be able to get outside and do a little bit sports and outside activities and not sit in front of the PC all day too. So this is just something which I really want to throw out there from the beginning.
Yes, exactly. Another thing that that I didn't mention is that your Twitter feed actually consists of cat pictures as well, and a lot of outside activities. People can usually see you on some mountain outside, which always very impressive scenery.
Yeah, I think it's super important that even though people sometimes really focus on posting, showing what they're doing in their professional life to also really focus on, I don't know, that there's so much else out there and that it's important to do sports or to go hiking. And so that's why I also try to show this side of myself sometimes on Twitter.
If somebody wants to look, if a listener wants to look right now at Joey Prink, P-R-I-N-K on Twitter, or just search Johanna Pirka. If somebody wants to see if Florian is actually speaking the truth. And I think they will see. So, yes.
So, yes, when we had our pre-interview, we basically tried to figure out how to approach this talk. And we figured out that you're wearing so many hats, and usually people come to you asking you as a person in one of your different roles. I named all of them, basically. But people will always come with a specific topic that they want their opinion or your opinion on. And so we decided that we want to have a whole picture of who Johanna is. And so today will be actually the Johanna Metaverse podcast, which is the new hype, I guess.
Yeah, that's a fun description. Yeah, I like that. Looking forward. Looking forward. Quite fitting.
So, yeah, we will jump from here to there, whatever comes to mind. We have a few questions prepared, but we will see where this goes. One thing that I was actually drawn to when looking at your resume and also talking to you before is that you're focusing on combining research and entertainment. Mm-hmm. And this is something that when visiting conferences and listening to expert panels, many of those research topics are usually related to some kind of monetization and how understanding data will earn you more money. Or the other part is usually how games can be used in terms of gamification and serious games in some other industry. But this is basically somewhat disregarding the fact that games are actually fun and entertainment. And so it's cool that you research this specific field. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for pointing that out. I believe like sometimes in the past, just give like look at the example of educational games. In the past, topics like these have been approached so many times, but often from only one perspective. So sometimes it was educational games, for instance, being developed by educators. Just imagine like a physicist developing a physics games. So this game would be like super educational, but probably not really fun at all, because of course you need to have a background in game design to also understand how to make it engaging, versus when I as a game designer without previous knowledge in physics would create an educational physics game, this would be super fun, but wouldn't teach anyone anything about physics. And our approach is actually to bring these different disciplines closer together. So the games industry in general, the games related industry, the tools we have from gamers or game development, such as Twitch or Steam or Discord, and also apply them and bring them closer to other industries and to education and to health and therapy, basically. And I strongly believe that this, I don't know, a stronger collaboration between or merging, making bridges between the traditional entertainment industry and other industries can be like super helpful. And yeah, that's what we are also currently working on in our research. So we do work with a lot of industry partners from the entertainment industry, also known AAA developers, and do, for instance, data analytics in their games to find out, not this traditional, hey, how to get more money, but for instance, find out how are people actually playing with each other? Are they more engaged when they're playing with friends? How can we introduce them to new friends? So this is a typical problem from sociology, for instance. So it's a very multidisciplinary approach and something which I find super exciting to be able to work with so many different disciplines and get new ideas.
It sounds really interesting looking at games from a research perspective. We've had some guests already who work in education field with games. And obviously people do their research when they create games in terms of their own game design or on the topics. But somebody who's specifically talking about or doing this research as a service, basically, that's something we haven't spoken about so far. And I think it leads to actually also interesting use cases. And one of those was that you mentioned that during COVID, obviously, there was some problems of having or bringing your lectures to the students. And I think that was something that was discussed a lot as well in media in Germany as well, how to engage with students and how to get the lectures out there. And since you already come from games and have done your research on that, you moved all your lectures to Twitch. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about how that went for you?
Sure. So during the first lockdown, I think like the whole world was pretty shocked. And what you should know, like a little bit of my background research-wise, is coming from e-learning. So if someone should have been prepared, it was our institute, because we do a lot of e-learning and online learning and blended learning. But I mean, we were shocked too, because it was really clear that many tools have not been to a state they should have been to that very, very moment. And teaching and learning online is and was really hard. And what I did, because maybe a little bit of a like personal background, why I love academia or the university idea so much. I always found it really exciting that in general, a university is an open space, that if you're interested in a topic, you can just go to a university lecture hall. You can just sit there and there is a professor speaking about, I don't know, philosophy down there, and you're sitting in there. It's not your class, but you can listen, and it's an open lecture. And this is something which I always admired about universities, that you engage, you don't know really who's listening, but people are interested in what you're talking about. And I knew also from my lecture, which is, I have several lectures, but one of them is game design. And I knew that there were actually several listeners in my lectures, which were not from our university and were just interested in this topic. And so when the first lockdown hit, I thought, if I now move everything to one of those closed systems like Skype or WebEx or Zoom or you name them, then I'm going to lose those people. Then it's just another closed lecture. And I really did not want to close my lecture for that. So I thought, okay, I'll try and go for Twitch, because I had a little bit streaming experience in the past, just so much that I know how Twitch works, how to interact with the chat and how the streaming setup works. Mm-hmm. So I moved my whole lecture to Twitch, and it was super nice, because I had 140 students in my course, and at like one of the lectures, I even had up to 400 people listening. And this is amazing, because I felt like, okay, I can have a contribution for the world during this time, because every one of us was stuck home, we were all sad, but at least some people had another chance to learn maybe something or have some benefits out of that. And also I started to invite speakers from all around the world to also give some sort of benefits to our students, because again, they had a lot of disadvantages. They cannot use our equipment on site in our lab. Of course, it's an entirely situation because they cannot meet other students, but I wanted to at least give them some benefits back. And in that case, inviting guest speakers from all around the world, which we could not invite locally otherwise. And yeah, that's a little bit how I handled the lockdown lectures.
I have a question about this. Mm-hmm. As a previous person working at Twitch, or person working at Twitch previously, I had this thought many times, right? I was like, well, what? Shouldn't like a lot of education happen via Twitch? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be pretty nice? And well, it's well, it, I when I heard about you, Joey, that you are doing that, I was like, ah, fantastic. You know, this is a very tangible thought that I once had. And, you know, I didn't really follow it up, but then, you know, somewhere in the world, it becomes a reality. And I'm like, sweet, you know, and my question is, if you would be speaking to other educators who, are, let's say, maybe in the field, so they have the technological basics to operate Twitch, which isn't that easy as a streamer. What did you experience in your lectures on Twitch, and how did you make use of the interactivity? For example, you had 400 viewers, but only 140 of them were students. Did you have a kind of a like a room where people could talk, or how did you use the Twitch features, and what are your experiences, and what would you recommend other people who might want to try this, or maybe you would recommend them to try it, for which reasons? So all these questions.
Mm-hmm. Sure. We actually did research on that. So that's a topic which really is still like really close to us. And we also found, we looked at the data of Twitch and found that during the lockdowns, it was crazy, like how different activities on Twitch spread. So it was not used for gaming anymore, like not only for gaming, but also for music, for arts and culture, which was obviously content which was really needed during this time, and more lectures. And I would be very careful using Twitch for these sorts of activities, especially like serious lecturing content, because I had experience with Twitch before, and I think the listeners of your podcast who are aware of Twitch also know about the problems it comes with. So it comes with a lot of good things, but it comes also with a lot of challenges. Let me start with the good things. So I had much more, and that's why I'm still using Twitch for my lectures, I had much more interactivities compared to a traditional lecture. So for a lecture which would take me, let's say, 30 minutes, it took me 1.5 hours for the same lecture, because people were asking so many questions in the chat, were starting discussions, were telling own stories, recommending own tools. All of a sudden, we also had professional game developers in the chat giving additional tips, which I was not aware of as a teacher. So this was fantastic. And yeah. I implemented some ideas where I thought how to even make it more engaging. So for instance, have constant questions and where I would ask him just a simple one. Okay. What is your favorite game? Just to get to know a little bit my students. That's the same thing I would do in the classroom, but I cannot ask 140 students. But in a chat, 140 students can write at the same time, right?
Mm, right.
And this is something, so I reach way more people. I have way more interaction. I can decide what to answer, what to not answer. And here comes also the drawback. So colleagues of mine, they also run a way bigger lecture, actually. And because it's such a big lecture, they also got pretty a lot of additional viewers from outside their lecture, and a lot of spam and a lot of hateful messages. So all of a sudden their Twitch chat was polluted with hate messages and Nazi symbols and you name them. And this was a little bit the downside, because they did not have had this experience in the past. And I was prepared with moderators and knew what to do and that we need to ban and kick those bots and people immediately. But yeah, they did not have this experience, and they learned, they're still using it. But I just want to underline that it is good to try out Twitch, learn a little bit about Twitch and how the system works before actually using it for your own serious content. And
I mean, Twitch is an open door into the world. It's like a ground level door, and then as soon as the door is open, everybody can just walk into your house, room, or whatever.
Yes, so, yes.
You gotta have somebody at the door.
Yeah, and I mean, you can implement different systems, like for instance, subscriber chat. this wouldn't be good for the open lectures.
Nope.
the folder chat only, for instance, or that you have a really specific rule set or very strong banning. and own bots and so on and so forth. Yes. But you need to practice those things a little bit in advance.
Yeah. So practically, you could easily make a second kind of zero follower Twitch account on Twitch. You can't do private broadcasts anymore, so you would have to just go on an alt and then kind of test that and see how that works. That would be the practical recommendation. But so maybe if we end on a positive note on that topic, what would you say in short are the great things about streaming lectures on Twitch?
Obviously, so I love doing that, and that's why I'm still doing that, and also like super happy to help people who want to start with that. I also put together a little bit of a guide, which helped myself. But the positive note is definitely that you engage and reach way more people compared, especially compared to traditional online lectures. So with this interactive nature of Twitch, the chat, because it's already the atmosphere. Everyone is talking. Everyone is contributing. This is something which is really nice. And I honestly see benefits compared to a traditional lecture hall atmosphere, because as I said before, people can talk to each other, can talk while I'm talking. That sounds weird, but I feel it's a benefit when they would also take notes, right? But now they're basically adding their thoughts and taking notes or comments directly into the chat and share their thoughts with others. I find this super exciting as a
you kind of have a real time whispering, right? You're like which you don't want in an actual class. You would be like, stop whispering, pay attention. But
and the now reality it's like, is please start whispering, talk about
yes. Yeah. And I always thought when I mentioned that I had this idea in the past, and I was like, well, this is one of the best things actually, because and then I thought, well, you know, all lecturers at university should just have Twitch chat and not like a stupid kind of e-learning, no offense, but most of them are kind of like dusty, these e-learning softwares, at least when I was a student a couple of years ago. And Twitch chat is where it's at, you know, like with cool emojis and funny stuff. And so it would almost be valuable to say, even if you don't actually stream your lecture, you could almost say, let's go into this Twitch channel and here you can chat, because the chat is already so good. And it's culture right now, especially in gaming. So you could just say, hey, if you want to be talking to each other, use the Twitch chat here. Then you can whisper and I can still talk to you, right? Like, I seriously thought that, might be a good idea.
I think so too, especially since young people already know this. And what I found quite funny right now is that we are already, at this point, I don't really know where in the pandemic we are, because in Europe, numbers are going up again and who knows what will come next year. But we are already talking what you just said, Joey, about traditional tools compared to Twitch in a world where a lot of people actually couldn't even cope with using Skype or Teams in their daily offices or lectures or whatever. So which is always like fascinating to me, and you adopt that in a really like it's hard to understand how people still haven't caught up to that. And you need to remind yourself that if you work in games somehow, then the tools we are using are usually a few steps ahead, and they are mostly for entertainment purposes. But many people during this pandemic found out what Twitch actually is, what content there is, how it could be used differently. So that really sometimes baffles me, being thrown into this world of people not even understanding how to cope with like internet interactions.
Yeah, but I see so much potential in games. This is like what I said in the beginning, that I would love to bring the like industry and education and so on and so forth closer to the games industry and all the tools they're using, because game engines can also be used for so many other purposes, like simulations, or anything so many things outside of entertainment. We have Discord, Twitch, and so on and so forth. And I think, as you just said, the games industry is always like technology wise, so innovative, has interesting ideas. And let's be honest. I mean, the requirements of the gamers towards frame rate and how good the networking works, the requirements are so high. So yep. It needs to be stable. So I was not surprised when all of a sudden academic conferences, funerals, weddings, birthday parties were not happening on Zoom, but in Animal Crossing or on Minecraft.
Yeah.
I mean, those are systems which work so stable with lots of people, give you so much advantage compared to a traditional Zoom call. And just as one example, a traditional Zoom call is really lovely, like, because I see the both of you, right? And it's nice to see each other, but it's so obvious that both of you are in different rooms. Mm-hmm. So all the three of us are somewhere at different places all around the world. And we are physically not in the same room, in the same space. We can talk, but we are not spending time together in that sense. If I go to Animal Crossing and meet you there, it's so lovely because all of a sudden we can spend time together because we are all three in the same location, can move around. It works really well in Animal Crossing or Minecraft. And then we can go to a virtual museum or aquarium or whatever. And I was not like shocked like many others that it was Animal Crossing was all of a sudden misused for all different other activities but gaming.
Yeah, I feel like as somebody whose main game for a really long time in my life has been World of Warcraft, that kind of like online interaction as real interaction between real people has been a part of my life for so long now that actually in the beginning, when playing that game, it was something very special when you would actually meet people outside of that world in real life. And then you would be like, holy hell, like this is crazy. These people really exist. And that was something that like this experience turned backwards in a way of now people realize that they can be anywhere at any time online and meet there. Mm-hmm. For us, it was like really, oh yeah, we could also like sit in a car and drive for a few hours and meet in person. And that was something that was always like at the heart of games for me from that moment on, especially something that was hard to explain to people who never understood that, that this interaction for many people is the same as just meeting in person.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like games are still so often misjudged because so many people are going into like entertainment space, into games because of the social experience. And this is something which many people just don't see.
Yeah. One question that I had while we are talking about these different environments is you wrote your doctoral dissertation on motivational environments. What are those?
So the idea was back then when I started my master thesis, I have to go a little bit back now. I don't know if this is still known, but Second Life and yes, OpenSim and Open Wonderland were still a thing. So those traditional virtual worlds. So this is like where I started my master thesis. Fun fact, this was like so outdated and nobody was interested. And here we are in the middle of a pandemic and this is now the new... No swearing now, but the new cool thing.
Nice one. I would have not dodged that one. I would have said it.
Yeah, but however, like, so this is like where I started, and I had to drop the topic of virtual worlds because nobody was using it back then anymore, and it was so outdated, it will not be the future. And then during my dissertation, I still focused on virtual experiences. Again, this idea of bringing games and non-gaming context together. So in my case, it was a lot of around physics experiences or computer science education and how to make those environments more engaging. So I looked into immersive environments, mainly virtual reality environments. So this is where I ended up in my journey of the dissertation. But also into, for instance, like a very different scenario. You have a traditional in-class setting for teaching computer science, like computer science or mathematical course, and how to now use game elements to make it more engaging. So for instance, I don't know, attract the different player types, make a little bit of competition, tell stories, make smaller quests and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One topic that I stumbled upon, or that actually came up during also our pre-interview, was, and I found that really funny because we all three said that it somehow like touched us in a way. You were speaking about, obviously we went through all your hats that you're wearing. This, what I found out recently is that there's this saying, which is used in a short form, which is jack of all trades. People use that to describe themselves. And, actually I found out recently that the whole quote, is supposedly a jack of all trades is a master of none, but oftentimes better than a master of one. And, we said that this is, really, it reverberates, and you are somebody who has this, like, wears these many hats, does these things that seemingly might not be connected, but they are all somewhat connected in you as a person. And, that when I found out about this whole quote, I'm usually not somebody who goes for the like quote things, but this one really like touched me in a way. And I even put it in a bio somewhere of mine because I felt like it really described me well, but I think you're even like, it describes you even better.
Yeah, it's sometimes difficult. As you mentioned in the intro, for me, I never thought about my many hats. It just started off, right? So it came one by one, and I just got more invested in each of those small little portions of my life. And it was always very clear for me, like when I am like talking about my research stuff, or like also within research, I have a focus on data analytics or on virtual reality or really strongly on games. And depending on what conference I would go to, for me, it was super clear to really sort of focus on this field, only talk about this specific elements because I was wearing this specific hat. And it's sometimes a little bit difficult because, of course, when you're invested in many fields, you cannot really be the super strongest expert in one of the fields, because time is limited. that's a fact. But I always felt good about that. I always felt like, hey, I have an opportunity here that I'm able to work in different fields, to work together with different groups of persons, and also always felt it as a benefit for myself, which was not like that probably as a child. But of course, there are so many different people all around the world, and we all have different talents and things we're invested or interested in. And for me, I could never decide probably. And especially when I was young, like for instance, when I'm playing the piano, I love playing the piano, but of course, especially if you're a child and your friend, is playing the piano, but really only playing the piano. And this is his or her thing. And they're getting so good in that. And you won't, and you know that you'll never be that good because you don't spend so much time playing the piano. You like it, but you also want to play football, for instance. And of course, like I think you have to learn that at some point you need to find your passion. And many people find their passion in one specific thing, one specific field. But it's so okay if you're interested in more. And you don't have to be perfect in one thing or perfect in many things. If you have a good overview and you enjoy what you're doing and you become good but not perfect, that's also something, isn't it?
I usually call this in my head the 80% rule, because it's kind of you can get to 80% in something in with, like, let's say not 10,000 hours, let's say 1,000 hours or something, and then the other 9,000 hours maybe take you from like 80 to 95 or something. So you get like very diminishing returns, and so you can just level up some skills to like 80%, and and then you're fine with that, you know. You can hang with other people, you can jam, you know, but you don't have to be the super duper uber expert in something. And I mean this for me is the main topic here, so I want to jump in here and widen this room for this topic, because like Florian said, it hit me when we talked about it, and I want to really put some light into various corners of this. And I thought maybe we could start with Joey, if you wouldn't mind telling us a bit about, you mentioned being a kid, and mm-hmm. how was your childhood? How did you grow up? And maybe in a general sense, what were your influences, and where did your many interests come from, you think? Or when did you experience that? Yeah, however the story goes.
Mm-hmm. Sure. A story which I always like to tell, because I think this was certainly something which shaped me. I like one of my earliest memories was actually that I was like 3 years old, something around that age, and where you can usually not write or read yet, but I knew and I can remember that what those comments or what comments I needed to put into this DOS console of my father's PC in order to start Prince of Persia. And this is something which is really, really haunting me, because I find it so, like in retrospect, really inspiring that, like, there is this small little girl sitting in front of this giant PC and just loving to play this prince saving another princess. And
How old were you when you did that?
I think probably 3 years, something like that.
Yeah, so that's pretty good, right?
It was really young.
Could you already read at that time?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, but you could enter whatever you...
But I knew what weird symbols I need to enter to start that game. It was not a lot, because... but yeah, this and King's Quest.
Nice. probably something like pop.exe or something, right?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. And this was... So I think already a little bit shaping my future, because I was like, I never was afraid of the PC, because nowadays we so often have this conversation how we get more people and especially women interested in computer science. And I think, like, if you just think of this small girl and I'm messing up DOS. What else could go wrong, right? Yeah. So if I didn't break the PC back then, why should I break it now?
Well, your powers have grown, young woman. You know, anything could be possible. And how did that conversation between you and your dad go, if you remember? Because, I mean, he obviously let you do that. And, you know, that's, I think, important to have that freedom
as
well, right?
To have the access, to have the freedom, to have, it's not support, like, in that sense, like,
it's responsibility, it's trust.
To have, exactly. And this freedom, trust, yeah. And not the stereotype. Like, for instance, just imagine, and this is like what's happening still. He would have said, no, that's not for you. That's only for your brother. And I hate those stereotypes still. I mean, if you go now, it's still to a children's shop and there's a pink area and a blue area and you have dedicated, toys for female babies and for male babies. I mean, how ridiculous can it be? And I think this was super important that I didn't had to face this when I was young.
And why do you think that was the case? Did your dad kind of know you very well or understand you like that? Or that's why I asked, how did the conversation go? I mean, it was obviously a couple of years ago, but yeah, I was kind of curious about the agreement you found or how that worked.
I'm not entirely sure like how this happened. I was too young. But I know that he was always interested himself in PCs. And I think as a parent, you want to share things you're interested in with the children. I mean, he was not in computer science or anything. But he was interested in that. And I think like when I saw him, also building the PC, and I was able to also like hold a screw at least or something like that. Mm-hmm. This is certainly something which takes away the fear.
For sure. And, you know, I remember sometimes my gaming experiences from, I don't know, the ages 3 to 8 or whatever. And, you know, playing various games at the time, like, I don't know, with 3, I played some pinball and something with some various games with my uncle. And then later with some friends, Mario and Zelda on the 64. And then I sometimes look back and I'm like, man, we were really bad. Like, we didn't really get very far. So, crucial question, how far did you get in Prince of Persia 1?
I can't remember. In my memory.
Hard game, you know?
In my memory, I beat the... I came to the... Was it like this Sultan? I don't know the English term for Sultan. Yes. But the final... character in that game, in my memory I've seen it. I'm just not entirely sure because there's so much wrong about how our memory works and how, and I'm pretty sure this could be one of those typical wrong memories.
Sure. Okay, but you didn't, you did get somewhere, which is, that's cool.
Absolutely. And yeah, and I also can remember it was not like always the major part of my life, the PC and the games and so on and so forth. But in all of my memories, like also when I was like playing with the neighbor's children, we were sitting together with our Game Boys and playing Pokemon or stuff like that. Or then with the Nintendo 64, I can remember like the Zelda Ocarina of Time. And like with this one other person in my class, we talked about how to solve the puzzles, because back then it was not full of YouTube tutorials. You actually had to talk in the classroom or look in the, there was like this manual for the solutions. It was different back then.
Yeah, different and difficult. Definitely one of the games, Ocarina of Time, where I remember like just getting super hard stuck very early on. I always played it with one friend, and then I played it a couple of years later and I'm like, well, this is pretty obvious how to get through there. Then I got through there the first time and I was like, why didn't we get this done earlier? And we were like maxing out our play time and we would just run in circles and like collect rupees and maybe do the shops in the city because we couldn't get into the castle and stuff like that. It was so funny. So that's what I meant. Like, we were so bad. We didn't know.
But have you looked at the remaster version on the Switch? Because I got almost sad when I saw that one. Because one of the nicest memories, again, is that when I was stuck for a while and I had to talk to other people or look in this book for solutions or had to try to figure it out. But I was stuck there for a while. And now in the new solution, there's this stone of wisdom. So if you're stuck for, let's say, 10 seconds, you just crawl into the stone of wisdom and then you see a video how you solve the puzzle.
Oh wow. No. Yes. Isn't that seems to be illegal.
Yes, that, right? My heart broke.
But this opens up a very interesting topic, which comes up once in a while. And then it whenever somebody says something mildly inappropriate or whatever on that topic, then there's a whole media circle around it. People will get mad in social media and then it dies down again, which is how difficult games should be and how accessible, which obviously is a valuable discussion if it's not done on a, which, I mean, probably you could say that about most discussions, if it's not done on the social media level where people will just like not argue in good faith. But there is this sort of, I would say, gamers' pride in a way that was always there. But if you talk to people now, then they say, well, maybe good game design means that these kind of problems don't exist. But people our age definitely all have these memories of not being able to beat the game, having to look it up somewhere, being stuck forever and still getting enjoyment out of that. While now it's very acceptable to say, well, you can just like lower the difficulty of the game and you can enjoy the story or whatever. So people play games for different ways. What do you think about that?
That's a very difficult topic. I mean, what you mentioned at the beginning, like difficulty versus accessibility. I feel accessibility as a topic to make it as accessible as possible to marginalized groups, people with handicaps, and so on and so forth. I think this is super important, but that's a very, very different story because a game can be difficult, but still accessible. Mm-hmm. So just to point that out. But in terms of difficulty, there are so many games out there. There are every day, we are hitting new records, how many games are published on every platforms every day. It's crazy. It's super competitive. And of course, if a game gets too difficult at some point, people tend to have sometimes the tendency to then rather play one of the other 300 games in their pile of shame on Steam instead of trying to push themselves a little bit further. I personally love the challenge and, mm-hmm. and what I get from the gaming society right now, it is that there is a really strong, push towards, hey, we want to have more difficult games again and we like the challenges. And I think, and I have the feeling that the game designers are listening. And just look at, Metroid, which was published, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yeah, recently.
Very recently. And this is a challenging game. This comes with a lot of challenges and, I like the idea that you can change the difficulty. You could do this always also in the past, for most of the games. And, but it comes with interesting challenges and people love it. So I believe there's place for both in the future of games. There will be always games which want it as easy as possible or as adaptive as possible. This is, by the way, a different new controversial story. What is if a game adapts dynamically while you're playing to your personal needs?
Yep.
This is something which we are actually doing research about, but not a lot of game designers. Like, of course, there's a conversation around that because some game designers would say, okay, but this is then taking away our creative efforts. Is also an interesting discussion point. But I believe like for all of those ideas, there's space in the future of games because it's so diverse and more people are playing and more people playing means more and more people are having different interests and needs when they play those games.
Yeah. I since you're a game designer and we are at this point, I would like to come back something that I didn't actually think we would talk about now, but since we are on this, I mentioned World of Warcraft and in general, then the thinking about the game design of MMOs, there is this component that now not many games have it anymore or not many popular games. And the question is always like, there was New World recently, there's Final Fantasy games that are in the MMO sphere. But this element of the grind, which is a very, very old and like known thing, even in mostly Asian MMOs. Obviously, it's even harder than what we are used to even in Europe. But that's something that not many people enjoy, but a specific group of people. And I myself also kind of like these, it could be meaningless tasks of like doing the same activity over and over to get to a point with, because it can be very relaxing and you can really like, turn off your brain in a way, just like relax, don't think about stuff. What do you think about this kind of mechanic? And do you think there will be games like MMOs that will get to the point where they become as big as World of Warcraft once was?
That's a good question. I actually asked myself the same question, like personally, while I was playing New World last week. I think it's a very powerful strategy because I think it, why do we play games? We have different reasons why we like to play games. And one of the reasons can absolutely be to, as you just said, to get into a really relaxing state where we don't really necessarily need to think about a lot of other things which happened all day long or in society right now. And I think like this such repetitive tasks really help you doing that. And whether this is now like folding my clothes or I don't know, in real life or chopping 1,000 trees in New World or in an MMO, I think this is, it's the same idea that you can just relax your brain. And I find it quite interesting. It's, for me personally, it's sometimes a little bit frustrating. So I love story elements of games, but again, every one of us is different.
But
I certainly have days where I had to really, really work all day long and mainly working hard with my brain. I don't know if this is a thing or if you can say
yes.
That.
Yes, you can.
But then it feels just nice to just sit in front of the PC and do something repetitive because maybe it's raining outside, so I cannot go for a run or something like that. And yeah, so why not? If people are enjoying that, then this is something and which is absolutely legit.
I have a follow-up to that, but it will steer the topic. So, Florian, if you wanted to have some remarks on that, I would give you the first step.
No, it's fine. You can join in.
Nice, because Joey, you asked, why do we play games? And that's one of the questions that I really have on my mind, and I wanted to ask you about that. And then after that, I would really love to get back to, you know, the jack of all trades topic, if we find an avenue, which I'm sure we will, because I think there are many things to discuss there as well. But I mean, you're doing a lot of research in, around, about gaming. You have your own experiences. I'm working on a documentary right now. It's called Purpose of Gaming, where we want to explore psychological motivations via stories from real people. As to why they game and what it does for them in different stages of their life. And I suppose I wanted to know what would you say is the purpose of gaming? Maybe if you would allow yourself to set the possibilities really high, you know, like if games could do anything or something, you know what I mean? It's not just, you know, to relax yourself after a long day, but let's think really deep, really strong.
Yeah.
Why did you game? Why do people game? What is the purpose of gaming?
So I'm not speaking of statistics here because I'm pretty sure you heard a lot about the different like benefits of gaming, like the social experience and what we just said.
I mean, if you want to drop some statistics, sorry, feel free. Yeah, because I mean, we're not usually have many stats here. So if you have some cool ones ready, but other than that, totally agree. Yeah, but. Feel free.
I would love to look at this as a little bit more like of a personal experience, not so much the research experience, but what I see in games, what I cannot see in quite any other medium in that sense is, for instance, that games can tell very personal stories, can let you see the world from a different perspective. live a day in the life of someone else. And that's why games are also called the empathy machines, right? Mm-hmm. Because in games like Dead Dragon Cancer or This War of Mine, you are actually exposed to very difficult stories or in the game Path Out, where you experience how a Syrian refugee had to escape from his beloved home and family to come to Austria. And you all of a sudden you see the world from a different perspective. So for me, this is like one of the most interesting, not like the lone, but one very interesting purpose of gaming, that you can actually experience something from a very different experience, perspective, that you can live the life from someone else. And I think especially in our society right now, our society is so split. It's so terrible what's happening right now all over the world. And I think especially now we need different perspectives and need to see what it means to be someone else in order to gain a little bit of empathy. And the second perspective, this is something which I'm seeing from my point of view very, very rarely. For me, games are culture. For me, games are something really artistic, full of culture. And I would love to speak more about that or hear more about that. So I started with this project, which was back then called A Year of Playing the World, where I tried to find and play games from every country of this world and see a little bit, what are the different influences? And it's so interesting because what I found was sometimes a little bit sad, because when I ask you, hey, who is your favorite author? You immediately know, what is your favorite book? You immediately know who is the author, where they're coming from. Maybe you even know a little bit of a backstory of the author. If I would ask you, what is your favorite game? You probably don't even know where it was developed or who are the persons behind that. Eventually, maybe you know the name of the publisher, maybe the studio. And I find it really interesting because if you look, especially in indie games, you find so many personal influences on the games, cultural influences. And I think we should really value this more. Does this make sense?
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Definitely.
And yeah, this is like where I see a lot of valuing games, which from my perspective is not put enough attention to it, because games as social experiences, games as like for instance to learn something, games for pastime, games for you name it, those are all sort of known facts. Or if you look at the Entertainment Software Association statistics, if you want to hear, read about statistics, you can actually see that the majority of gamers are playing games also because of the social experience. There are games that make you fit, like all the sports games. But culture and the empathy part, I think this is something which is not seen enough yet.
And one of the things that is our focus, or that why we kind of start that project, is that, or my thesis or something, is that there is and it kind of connects to the empathy machine, is that there is this possibility to be a hero, where in real life maybe you can't yet because you're a child and you have very little agency in the world. But and then there's especially the part where maybe you're a child that is not so grounded in the physical world. So maybe you are not playing football for some reasons, or you're having a harder time to make friends or get attention or to impress people, or whatever it is that, you kind of, that facilitates physical world interaction. Trying to avoid the term real world, because games are quite real, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's also a hero machine for me. Empathy machine. I like to call it hero machine, where you can experience what it means to be a hero. If you look at Zelda, for example, that's such a iconic story, you know, with development, growth, larger and larger enemies and better skills, items, capabilities. And that is, you know, what living as a hero is like, and a well-made game can really represent that. And you can feel that. And I think there's a feeling in us that that wants to be satisfied of being like that, you know? And you can do that in a game. And then maybe you can also, or I'm sure actually, you can then transfer that into the physical world. But at least you're getting some good prep work here, and you're not completely, you've never understood, you have already felt it before, you know? You quite quickly as a kid, it's probably innate. You have this innate understanding for something cool that happens. That's why we get like emotional when we watch a movie or a Pokemon episode or something. Always got me emotional because always transformation happens and so on. But then in a game, you can go the steps yourself and kind of interface. And yeah, means that a game has to be well written too, right? It won't just be a puzzle. It will have to be a story like that. But yeah, that's a big thing that we are thinking about there.
And I would take it a step further, because the idea of a hero, yes, but for so many people, it's just the idea of being, I don't know, a little bit more normal sometimes, because I'm speaking again. I feel it's so important that we think more about making games accessible, because there's so many people with handicaps who really love to play games to feel also more like connected, have these social connections in a virtual world, or feel how it would be to run or walk through this virtual world. And I think there are so many important elements in games which can trigger that.
And you mean that you even that you have access to running, moving, being free at all?
Just this level of freedom.
Yeah.
Which many of us don't have.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. It's really about freedom. Being a hero, or it could also, I mean, you know, walking or moving around at all can also be, you know, a heroic act, depending on what's possible for you, right? So for me, it might be flying because I can't, and for somebody else, it might be roaming because they can't. So if that's roughly what you mean. Cool. Yeah, and in the topic of the empathy machine, there's also something in there, you know, something about sensitivity. And I think maybe that brings us back to the jack of all trades, or the Jane, or the Jill, I don't know what we say, of all trades topic. Because I feel like it has a lot to do with kind of, well, if you have many interests and you're like scattered and you're into many things, it seems to me that has a lot to do with sensitivity, because you can recognize many different things as interesting and as worthy of pursuit, right? And maybe I wanted to connect there with you again to what we talked about earlier. And maybe can you remember a time where you really noticed, like, well, first maybe what do you think about that, and then when did your multidisciplinariness kind of kick in, if you remember that?
I mean, I the way you just mentioned it is scattered. It's a very interesting point, or interesting term to use here. But I think this was always me. Also, already as a child, or slowly growing up, I noticed that I have different interests, like, again, music or sports or different subjects in school, or maybe not. And I think you notice things like this very early on. And I think sometimes our society fails a little bit to recognize that, or push this in a positive way. Because I feel like sometimes there is this struggle from there that you have to be really good in something. And I feel this is also something which is sort of given by the society, or if you watch a movie and the movie is about this, I'm back to this piano star, piano player, or a great football player. And most of the time when you watch sports or anything, it's about celebrating specific heroes in one specific field. So this is something which is sometimes a little bit difficult to also see the positive sides when you are only looking at media and I don't know, and listen to our general society.
Mm. And I kind of feel like interviewing both of you a little bit about this. So Florian, how is this for you? Because you relate to this as well, right? And how is this general mindedness for you? I'm very curious, actually.
It's really interesting because while you were talking about this, my mind really went places and I was starting to like wander off. I was still listening, but I was thinking more about like, how is this for me personally? And it's what just popped into my head now. It goes a little bit away from the topic of like different skill sets, but this emotional connection and this being able to find interest in different things. To me, when you talked about the film and you see this great piano player or something, I want to hear what your opinion is about this, because what I just realized but what popped into my head right now is that for me personally, this goes even further. And I had this, which at some point I needed to learn about when I grew older. I was very focused on stories that were happening in books and movies and whatever. And to some extent, I really idolized the hero figures in those stories. Or to me, it was really hard to, since it was easy for me to really dive deep into those stories and imagine that I was in them. And for me, they were very real. It was really hard to realize one thing that is often portrayed in books and stories about relationships between people, because in those stories, those relationships, especially for younger people, they are often very like ideal. The prince always gets the girl. There's always this final goal to reach. You can get be the best footballer, whatever, like the hero always gets there. But in real life, actually, these are a lot more nuanced. And it was very hard for me to realize that those stories are still using tropes in a way that don't fit me personally or life in general. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but this is something that I just realized and that my brain just started thinking about while you were talking about this. So maybe you have something to add to this.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I think the one thing which comes to my mind about what you just said, I think, especially if we're young, because of course we did not have so much time yet to be on Earth, but we focused on specific areas, right? So for me, it was, for instance, playing always the same type of games, yeah. Or eventually what you mentioned, maybe it was a specific type of book or book genre you were invested in. And what I realized at some point in my life that having, for instance, hey, I love role-playing games or I love fantasy books. This is a very bad start to be creative and think outside of the box. And I got, I think also personally way more, how to put it, creative and open and accepting, not only like for myself, but for, I think everything, when I opened up and played games from genres, which I thought I hate. or reading books from entirely different disciplines, which I was not at all interested in. And all of a sudden, it's not only the hero stories, and all of a sudden, it's not only what you just said, the prince getting the princess and so on and so forth. All of a sudden, it's so many different perspectives. And this is something which really was, I think, a really important step towards my personal career or living a good life. When I opened up to everything. And when I really tried to, that's why, like, next to me, there's a stack of 10 books and they're all extremely different. Or for the games. That's actually why I started back then this project of playing games from all around the world, because I only played AAA games for the Xbox, which were either GTA, Mafia, or Skyrim.
Not a bad selection, but also but still, not it's very varied.
Right. And I think this is something which certainly helps the mind and to see other perspectives.
I want to comment in the same line like you commented, and then I also have a question. So for me, I think for me, it was very painful to see, you know, for example, I played in a band and my bandmate, who is actually now the audio engineer for this podcast. So hello, Zebby. This is me breaking the fourth wall to you. Hello. was such a great musician. And he still is, and he's making it his career. And I was kind of, we were a creative duo, but I could not, you know, be as creative as he was. I was a great help to him, which I realized later, but it really gave me trouble with my ego as well. And I was like, well, you know, I can't hang here. You know, I need my own domain. And then I went into other fields, but these experiences I had often where I was like, you know, I will never hang out with the football players because I'm not that good at it. And it's also not that important to me. And then this band thing was very important to me for long. But then it was like, well, yeah, I feel like I can't progress here, you know. And then it was about finding, well, what is a kind of a persistent skill that you have honed, you know, even just recognizing that through all your pursuits in your when you're in your late teens, early 20s, what have you always done? You know, and then I found a bit more that maybe talking and these things might be persistent things for me. So finding a focus in the chaos seems to be like something important. And well, when it comes to the heroic stories, I'm still in pursuit of, you know, my heroic self, you know, if I'm honest with you guys. I still don't buy that the stories are just stories, you know. I think there is truth in there, truth and nuance, but yeah, I'm still curious, you know, how to be the hero. That still drives me. And maybe how to get the princess too, if I'm perfectly honest. But so I think, yeah, thanks. maybe these are three important. I think we both gave interesting accounts, you know. Maybe yours, Johanna, was a bit more about, well, actually, the world is just way more varied. And, you know, there's openness for everything. And maybe... Florian, you said, well, I think it's a little bit more varied than that. And maybe I'm on the side of, no, it's just like that, you know, there's still something to be found. But we all share this multidisciplinary interest. And I thought of like RPG classes, you know, and, you know, the representation in many books that is that I'm sure there are many books about many class types, but you know, the hero is often like a warrior type or something like that, you know, male or female, or like a magician or something. But there are also other things, for example, like the bard, you know, who's a bit more a jack of all trades, you know, and gets through with some trickery and something. But then he's always still in the cool, powerful party, right? Because he's needed with this kind of street smarts and this in between. It's the world of the in-between player or something. I don't really know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I always like to think of it not like in-between, but like like connecting, bridging. So I'm connecting, super happy. Yeah. Like, so if I think of my team, for instance, I know that like I have so many team members which have so much stronger skills than I have in different parts. And this is like the most important thing. And if I can just create them an environment when where they can thrive and be excellent in what they are, and I can be a little bit like make them a good environment and link them to each other, or then I'm happy, then I'm successful, and then that's where I see myself to linking, connecting.
That's good. And I think this is the time where I really wanted to ask you about that, where we can speak a little bit about making such a person like yourself, you know, going from the story of, oh, you know, maybe I'm scattered. I'm not sure if you share that sentiment. I certainly do. To, oh, no, I work really well like that. And it seems like that's something that you've achieved. And maybe you can give some tips for people who maybe kind of feel like that, and tell some stories about how you have worked that out practically, mm-hmm. how you manage that.
Sure. I think like everyone, and still now, there are really strong days where everything is more scattered, and again, there are benefits and drawbacks from pretty much everything, but also from being interested in so many different things. So like my curiosity, I think I have a very strong curiosity. That's why I'm invested in so many different topics, and I want to learn more. I want to know more. I want to do more. But of course, this comes to a price, because as we mentioned before, the time is very limited. And what you already mentioned, it's so important to find a specific focus. But I think it doesn't mean necessarily that you can only concentrate on one thing, but it can also mean that you can find a focus within yourself to work in an effective way on your various different projects. And I spent so much time like on finding and trying out different tools for productivity. So I'm really a little bit of a nerd in productivity tools. And I found a little bit of a system or different systems which do work for me. And I'm happy to share some of them, but already a little bit of a side note here. It doesn't mean that I am necessarily working with those systems and with all of those systems every day. This is also something which I have different phases, and sometimes I have a little bit of a different project which I want to focus on. Then I would apply different tools, just as a like already taking that away. So I think you have to figure out what tools work for you and for your current situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good disclaimer. And I think with that, feel free to describe in as much detail as you like how you work, what works for you.
So I'll probably throw some points out there. I cannot explain all the systems in detail, but I'll try to put at least keywords out there, which can be then Googled, because there are really good descriptions out there for most of the tools. So one base thing I do is, for instance, I have a very good schedule, and I use a bullet journal for scheduling. So I really try, if I would sit down every morning or the night before and then look at my day and really try to put my different projects I'm working on into my schedule already. So for instance, where I say, okay, in the morning between 8 and 9, I write on my book between 9 and 10, I will work on that project, and so on and so forth. And I use again a bullet journal for everything. This is a journal which has bullets instead of typical lines or something like that. And there's
it's a dotted, not because we don't want to confuse. Yeah. It's a dotted journal, and the bullet journal method is like popularized, I think, by Ryder Carroll. And mm-hmm. that's a book, and it's a kind of describes how to journal effectively via handwriting. Essentially, you can also do it in other ways, but this is really about using a dotted journal, and then there are certain codes for to-dos, schedule to the next day, and so on. And it kind of requires, I'm just giving my explanation because I've read this too, it requires to do kind of what you are describing, right? That you are kind of sitting down with it every day and you give it input and then it will give you something back, right?
Yes, yes. So this helps me a lot, for instance, to schedule my days. Then I use the Pomodoro technique, which is how to productivity technique that you really work focused on specific tasks. So for instance, if I write something and I say, okay, I want to get this chapter done today, I'll sit down and I break down my tasks into a 25-minute slots. This is like a tomato unit. I don't know the exact terms.
Fun fact again, it's called Pomodoro, which is, I think, Italian, means tomato.
Yes.
And that comes from these funny kitchen clocks that wind up, which are often in the shape of a lemon or a pomodoro. I have an apple now. And you can set these timers really easily to 25 minutes. And that is the what is now known as the Pomodoro unit.
Yes.
Please continue.
Yes, yes. And then all 25 minutes, you take a 5-minute break, and you really should get up and do something like entirely different. Drink water, go for it, take a few steps, and then you sit down again. And during those 25 minutes, you really work on your task, all emails and the telephone far away. So what also helps me a lot is that I have a morning ritual. So every morning I sort of do similar things. And this includes, for instance, meditating. This is something which I feel is in our society also super underappreciated.
But it's coming, but yes.
It's coming, but this is something which I find like a little bit ridiculous that people are, I don't know, making fun of it or whatever. But I mean, you're training your body regularly, and this is like super known that this is efficient. And if you train your body, you get stronger and more healthy. But you can also train your brain. And by meditating, you can really train that you are getting calmer, that you focus, that you have a lot of benefits by that. But of course, it requires you to train regularly. And I found that meditating really helps me to think clearer, to have a stronger focus, and to be more calm.
It's sometimes really ridiculous. Like yesterday I accidentally, and I haven't meditated in a week or something, and I accidentally came across a YouTube video that was like a guided meditation, 30 minutes. And I was like, screw it. Note that I didn't swear. I was really close. Screw it. I will just turn off my screens, take off my glasses, and just sit to this. And today I felt very differently. And I was like, I'm sure it was this. And how is this even possible? And if you don't mind, what do you use as a technique or as a tool for that?
I am very pragmatic. I use an app called Headspace.
Yeah.
This makes it really easy for me, and it's also like this gamified system. Hey, Joy, you haven't meditated for 3 weeks. Don't you want to?
And then the other way around is really nice.
And the other way around, right? Yeah. So now you have meditated for 20 days in a row. Don't forget to meditate today, because otherwise,
Does it have a bird?
A bird?
Yeah, that reminds you to do that.
Oh, I don't know.
That's a Duolingo joke, right?
Oh, okay. Yes. That's a Duolingo joke. Sorry.
Is it?
I'm sorry.
Is it?
Yes.
Got the joke. Because it's known that Duolingo, the app, has a really annoying bird that always tells you, hey, you haven't learned the language.
I'm so sorry. Sorry. Can we add some laughing sounds in the post-edit?
We will totally not keep the awkward not getting the joke scenario. No, we will. It's very funny. Okay, what else?
Yeah, okay. So this, then something which I find, two things I find super important: sleep and sports. So people, I don't know if this is a thing now or if this is gone already. So things like, hey, sleep is for the weak, and I'm so cool because I slept only 3 hours. That's all nonsense. Sleep is so important for you, and there are so many studies showing that your brain works correctly, that you don't get Alzheimer when you're getting old, that you are less depressed, and so on and so forth. So there are so many shown benefits in sleeping. And I always thought, I want to reduce the time I'm sleeping, that in total, I will have more hours a day where I can work on full projects. That's nonsense. I also started tracking how many hours I sleep a day, and found that the more, not the more I sleep, when I'm sleeping 20 hours, that's nonsense. But, I probably need around 8 hours, right? And when I sleep 8 hours compared to sleeping 6 hours, I am so much more productive, even though I don't have those 2 extra hours. In the rest of the hours I have all day long, I'm way more focused, way more productive, and have a much nicer life. So get your sleep, everyone.
Super good. Little comment from my end, as apparently always here. I read this book, Why We Sleep. By
Yes. Read that
one. What's the guy called? Walker or something? And Matthew Walker, actually,
mm-hmm. That's what I thought. Super important book.
I didn't read it all the way through, but I think there were two things there. There was a very terrible plaidoyer against caffeine in there, which mm-hmm. which is like that stays in your blood forever and it really messes with you and blah, blah, blah. So for everybody who loves coffee and or even green tea, I would not recommend this book because it's going to make you... No, so, well...
I'm already crying inside.
Yeah, but I, to be honest, I... yeah, well, that's another story. Anyway, but the other thing that's in there, I think, or that I at least read about sleep, is that when you regularly, let's say you have a couple of days where you're on 5 hours or less of sleep, and you drive a car, you're actually as dangerous as a drunk driver, because mm-hmm. basically your cognitive capabilities from your lack of sleep, which is usually, well, most people can't sleep on, don't have enough sleep on 5 hours, make you, well, technically drunk, which is pretty crazy, right? Which is for me was also very strong. I mean, I always sleep, but that was a good thing that I found quite amusing. And I've noticed that, sometimes taking a drive now to the airport in the morning on little sleep, that I've made a ridiculous mistake sometimes that I would never make otherwise while driving. So there's also not just this productivity thing, but an actual very serious cognitive thing going on.
Mm, exactly, yeah. And that's why I really want to stress this out, because I hear from a lot of people, oh, wow, you don't sleep, looking at your schedule or whatever. But I can always underline, I sleep a lot. and I feel this super important. And yeah.
And you go outside a lot. You, as we said in the beginning, maybe to go full circle, you highly value your time off of work, maybe something about that.
Yes. So this is also something which I really want to stress out and always want to communicate, because I also had times in my life when I was working late and working on the weekend, but I that's not good. So I really started to take off the weekends, really. And how do I do that? I started to schedule, like I would schedule a meeting. I started scheduling private things into my calendar, between 3 and 4 p.m. I will go running for an hour, or on Friday I will meet my game party, and so on and so forth. So really, that the private things are in your calendar, sport activities and so on and so forth, like every meeting. Because this is something which I found, when we have a deadline, and the deadline, let's say it's Sunday, and then I would rather quit all my personal things, I'm not going to the gym, I'm not going running, I'm not going hiking, but I will work on my deadline. But those things are as essential for you and your life than every other meeting and every deadline and so on and so forth. So I really try to put everything into my calendar in the beginning of the week, including, Sunday and Saturday, I will be gone most of the day for a hiking trip or a bike trip or whatever. And that way I have so much more energy also for the rest of the week. Because otherwise, if I don't get any rest or any outside activity or social activity or you name them, whatever is important to you, and you just focus on work, you don't have at some point any energy left. And I think we need to balance that. And
well, I think what very tangibly happens to me, maybe to give another metaphor, is like the part of me that wants to go outside, play and whatever, just start screaming. It's like a child, you know? It's just like, hello, you know, have you given me any attention recently? Or have you just been sitting over your stupid work? You never do anything other than work, right? If you see it like that, I see it like that. There's this internal dialogue comes up and just starts punishing you. And it will distract you so much that you won't be able to do the work that you want to do. Because you didn't do the fun stuff that you also want to do. That's at least what happens to me. And a question or something that I want to share with you guys before we maybe start wrapping up. And you will have the chance, Joey, if you have another crucial tip to bring it. But so I've recently discovered some interesting productivity apps. I've also been on a lifelong search, like all the to-do lists in the world never worked for me because I always stopped using them. And I always had the feeling, okay, I need something that's on a higher order, right, in the taxonomy, kind of like that's more consistent, that isn't just a single to-do, because usually my to-dos are way too big too, so they need a whole documentation, let's say, right? They're a whole function, a whole procedure, to speak in Cody terms. So I've been a lot on Twitter, and I found many people who are like, kind of, we try to begin describing ourselves here as like these sensitive people who get drawn into many directions. And that was very satisfying. Began at the end of last year and throughout this year for me. And through there, I found apps like Notion, for example. I don't know if you've heard of that. Mm-hmm. Or Roam as well, a bit more unknown, I think, which is for a tool for networked thought, where you can kind of bring a lot of things into connection, and it's coded so that things automatically kind of connect. Or Notion, which is like this kind of, well, you're basically building tools and pages for yourself that you can then read to yourself, right, and interface with. I think there's also something like Obsidian or something, but not to get too obscure. But have you, Johanna, and maybe Florian as well, ever heard of that? And have you ever used that and experimented with that?
So the Notion, indeed, we started using in our group. This is a very, very handy tool. I also like to use like a little bit more creatively open tools like Miro or I don't know Miro or Miro, which is like an open brainstorming tool, or tools like Trello where you can really organize notes. But in the end, for my personal organization, I really like to stick to the bullet journal, because I tried out a lot of online tools and a lot of or apps and so on and so forth. But in the end, I figured having my own handwriting, being able to draw something very quickly, this is a different sort of connecting me to my tasks, to my schedule. And yeah, so that's why I sort of stick to bullet journals in the end.
Yeah. That seems important. One of the things why I tried bullet journaling too, it's kind of nice, but I'm not regular in what I do. So I always, like, there's maybe a week or longer where I don't look at my work at all. And then I need to rebuild the habit, but I can look in my Notion again and all my documentation that I ever wrote is still there. So maybe for different ways, different people, different ways. Florian, have you ever seen Notion? Or something like that? Because maybe we can talk about off-air too. Maybe it's interesting to you.
Actually, I haven't. Yeah, you can tell me about it. I'm actually looking into things like journaling and that. Like what works for me right now. And this is really interesting because I will make a joke now again and then we will probably switch the topic.
Thanks for announcing the joke, bro.
But listening to you, first of all, this is the now recurring theme of mindfulness with Simon, which seems to come up once in a while in this podcast. And also, I didn't have a an appointment scheduled with my psychologist this week, but I think that did it for me because this is the stuff that I'm also working on right now. So it works perfectly, like all the mindfulness and scheduling and everything. So I think I got my session in, and actually just on a non-joking level, this stuff is really important. And for some people, or for many people, actually, this is really hard. And having structure in your life really helps a lot. So I think that this is a very important topic to talk about, especially maybe bringing it back a little bit to like the perspective I bring to the podcast from the work side and from like the industry side. I think that is stuff that people in our industry or creative industries overall really tend to forget, and don't take care of themselves.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Mental health is so important, and it's always like the body we focus on, but like mental health is as important, and we often do not talk about this, or I don't know. And thanks for pointing that out.
It goes hand in hand, and I would really like to maybe I heard a question like when you said, Florian, from a potential listener, it's like, well, okay, so but what does the structural stuff have to do, for example, with mental health or with being a kind of a multidisciplinary, curious, scattered person or something? And my answer would be, look, this is how you get, well, one of the things I always felt when I'm not productive or I don't know where to direct my focus or whatever, or I find one thing and like over direct focus and, you know, I can't put all of my energy in one job. It's way too much, but then that's frustrating and so on. So kind of learning to drive this curious car that I feel that I'm in with myself sometimes is like, well, if you do the things that Joey mentioned now, for example, you get in touch with yourself, you know, you write down every day what you want to do in a slow kind of mindfulness manner. Maybe you meditate, maybe you go into your body because that goes hand in hand, and you go out hiking, cycling, or whatever you like to do outside, which is worth finding out, by the way. You start to take yourself by the hand and connect to yourself. And then suddenly you will have better answers to your own questions. Like, well, what do I want to do? Or what is important to me right now? Or what not only should I direct my focus in, but what can and want I actually direct my focus in? And this connection with yourself, I think, is hard to get for scattered people. Because they never derive identity from, yeah, I'm really good at piano. Drop the mic, right? Like, that's it. That's me. I'm the piano guy. No. Or I'm the horse girl. Or I'm the car girl or the comics guy or whatever, you know? You don't have it when you're into so many things, and it's hard to derive self-understanding and identity. So maybe that's an answer to the question of why should we do that? Yeah, man. Mental health with Simon. We're out here.
Just one note, Simon. It's not called Piano Guy. It's called Piano Man.
Oh, Epic Piano Man. Yes, indeed. Or whatever. Okay, good.
Sorry.
Any other notes on this? Then we can do some quick fire questions and wrap this up. Joey, any things we forgot that you didn't mention that you wanted to mention? Anything you think about this? What I said, maybe?
Yeah, no. I can just underline what you just said. And there are so many things we don't talk about too often or not enough. And I'm happy that we talked about some of these now.
Yeah, it's great that we're sharing it. And this is the GNBE podcast, including, you know, mindfulness and lifestyle, which seems good to me. It's like, yeah, you know, that's... Hearing from somebody like you, you know, you're like this super productive gaming research everything woman. And it's like, yeah, no, you know, there's some magic to it, but also, yeah, you're taking care of it, right? It's important.
Mm. Cool. Okay.
Well, yeah, to you.
Yeah. Okay. So one last question that's not part of the usual quick fire questions is, but it probably... I don't know. Maybe it has a longer answer, but I just wondered because like
we have to watch time. So I would think twice about this.
Yes. One thing that I wanted to ask, it's a short question. Mm-hmm. you have so many awards won and honors received, which is really impressive. So I wanted to know if there's one specific one that means a lot to you.
Yes and no. In general, I think what people never see is that behind every one award or scholarship or good thing or accepted paper or published game or whatever you name them are like 100 failures. So whatever reward, award I'm seeing, what is invisible to others are all the failures mm-hmm. I actually had before getting this good thing. And that's why I couldn't pick one of them, because everyone is connected with this whole world, and which was created beforehand, which was also about failing or not winning and not achieving something. And that's why like every single good thing is always super important for me. Does this make sense?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so I won't go deeper into that, but start with a short question, which is, what is your favorite event that you like to do business at?
Oh, okay. That's the unexpected. I mean, I go to various events. Like I go to the industry events mm-hmm. on the one hand, mostly related to games and tech. And I go to academic events where we publish and show off our research. And I have to say, especially like the game industry events in the past have been for me a very fruitful kind of event, because I got so many interesting inspirations out of my comfort zone. Because again, like as a researcher, being at the academic events, they're very research driven, and this is sort of the world I grew up academically wise. But then going to industry events as an academic was something which was for me always an eye opener and very inspiring, and I think helped me to push my research also closer to actual applications and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and if you could name one specific event that you really like?
I thought I could really try to avoid this answer. Nice try, Joey. I have to name our own event, to be honest.
Perfect. Like,
the Game Dev Days. No, but honestly, I'm very proud of what we achieved with the Game Dev Days, and there are all around the world very game-like events, which I appreciate as much as our event. But of course, I have to name our event because there's so much sweat and blood in there. And free food. But we always focused, we didn't want to create a traditional business event, but a community event. Mm-hmm. So to make friends and not focus on business.
Perfect. So it's also your favorite event to hang out at, because that's actually the second part of the question. What's your favorite event to hang out at? But it's also your own.
I didn't want to answer it that way.
No, it's fine. It's all right. I've organized my own event. We're now doing smaller events, but I know the feeling. So a question about Berlin, since this is the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast. What's your favorite connection or thought about Berlin?
I love Berlin. I like being in the tech scene. Of course, there's so many good startups, and I can remember, I think I got a scholarship by Google at some points to visit a really cool conference in Berlin. And like, you have a games museum. What else? What else could a gamer heart want? So Berlin is really great and very inspiring.
Nice. I'll give over to Simon for his question.
Nice. Here we go again to interesting live things with Simon, and the final quickfire questions. We know you have to go, so we can try together to make them kind of quick, even though the questions are not that simple. Let's start with something funny. What is the purpose of your being?
Very, very simple. It's a very, very simple question.
I know, easy for you.
This will take now the next 10 minutes. But honestly, there's one book which I adore from Viktor Frankl, which is called, I think, The Man's Search
Man's for... Search for Meaning.
Thank you. And this is, like, for me, one of the most important books. And he describes three major meanings, which he found as a psychologist in life. One is about, like, experiencing something, encountering someone, an attitude we would take towards an avoidable suffering. And the last one is creating a work or doing a deed. And I think especially in the last one, like, I would love to leave this planet by knowing that I did something for our society or for our planet, or, like, left something, some sort of a work. This would be my personal purpose, that I left something good for the world.
Thank you. Very beautiful. What inspires you?
Yeah, I think you already noticed through my scatterness, I'll take this word now, that I am interested in so many things, and I got inspiration from so many different parts, whether it's book, whether it's games, movies, TV shows, going hiking, going to the nature, doing different sort of sports, music, everything. So I take whatever I get and try to find inspiration there.
Righteous. What is a beautiful day to you?
That's probably a difficult question to answer. But I tend to sometimes reflect on my days through diaries or journaling or like, and I found that I have a good day if I was successful and productive. But I also had a good day if I didn't do a thing and was just, for instance, outside in nature and enjoying a mountain or something like that. So this is something which is, I think, really dependent on your current needs. And that's why difficult question to answer, but yeah, can be diverse.
Indeed. Here's the funny one. What's something you believe that you think most people will disagree with?
I don't know. This is super difficult. I think I have a lot of controversial views to some topics. Looking at the statistics, something which a lot of people disagree with me is that games are a good thing. but this is probably the wrong podcast for that. Of course, as someone being in tech, I love working with AI and data analysis. But of course, I know also the ethical limits and so on and so forth. So I think, like, my whole work and world of work is actually something which a lot of people find sometimes controversial.
World of Warcraft.
I was already in the different line of thought.
All good. But that's a joke for me now. What are you doing today? Oh, just, you know, playing, going into the world of Warcraft. Yeah, good, kind of checks out. Thank you. Do you have books that you like and that you often maybe recommend or like to talk about or give to people or whatever? Could be one, could be two, could be three, maybe.
Yes, many. I love so many books. I have, like, whole lists of books which I recommend on my website. But I thought of three which I want to talk about here. So one is, which we already talked about, you knew the title.
Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
Thank you, by Viktor Frankl. Yeah. So this is something which I found super important. It tells the story from Viktor Frankl when he was, he was in Holocaust and I think in Auschwitz. And then finding still a meaning for your life is a very difficult task. And he tells his story and then also how he still found his meaning. And it's a very philosophical, psychological masterpiece. Then one, which is probably also very known, especially in this community, is the War of Art.
Oh, yeah. Stephen Pressfield.
Yes, exactly. Break through the blocks and win your inner creative battles. And this is something which is really motivating. Also, the book a little bit bridging creativity and productivity. And the last one is probably super unknown, but I thought can be also very interesting based on what we talked about today. It's called The Path, What Chinese Philosophers Can Teach Us About the Good Life by Michael Pewitt, a professor of Chinese history from the Harvard University, and Christina Groslow. And this is, I love philosophy. I'm also very interested in reading Seneca and so on and so forth. And I feel The Path is a very inspiring piece, which gives you ideas from the Chinese philosophers.
Very nice. Thank you for that. I didn't know that. And I'm studying the Tao, which is the Chinese word for the path. Yeah. Like the OG book a lot.
That's what it's based on. And he is basically, Michael Pewitt is a super famous professor of the Chinese history, and he is summarizing his lectures in this book.
Very cool. That could be fun. Yeah, I might actually. Cool. Okay. But, and so interesting that you're into all of that. That might warrant
maybe you guys want to do the next podcast together.
Yeah. We could go deep into many things here. Okay. Let's finish this one up before we set our sights again. Scatterbrain, stop it. Hey, what's the change you want to see in the world? And second question right behind it, how do you contribute to it?
So I think we can all see how extremely scattered and split our society is right now, and it's just like getting worse. And I personally, what can I do? I'm of course it's very limited, but to my extent, what I can try to do is on the one hand, contribute with my research, to use tools to make digital tools maybe a little bit more, I don't know, easier to understand, explain things like AI and games to the society, try to, I don't know, make everything happen in my limits, or to my knowledge, to explain and to make it more accessible, especially these future digital worlds and virtual worlds.
Yes, for sure. I think we will see a lot of that. And then, almost done. Have you lost anything on your way, on your path, that you would like to get back?
I think, and this reflects pretty much into the book, The Path. I mean, we cannot really change what has happened in the past. And I strongly believe that there many, many terrible things happened to all of us, and every one of us has their own package of history and terrible things which happened or will happen to carry. And the only thing we can actually do is to accept what happened and to at least have a learning out of that. So I wouldn't, there was a lot of things, but I certainly think that I tried to grow as much as possible out of those things.
Beautiful. And for the future, what is something that you haven't done yet, which you would like to do?
I haven't been to Japan.
Nice.
That's a very random answer. No, but there's a lot of things which are still on my to-do list. There's, for instance, a lot of mountains which I still want to climb all around the world, a lot of cultures which I want to meet, a lot of projects I want to work on, and this list is so ridiculously long, and I try to collect the list of things which I want to, things I want to do and achieve, and where I want to travel to, and I try to collect those things once a year, and reflect a little bit of what I achieved and what is still there. And I think this is something which keeps me driving. Hey, there's still so much I want to do, and so this list is extremely long and would fill another podcast.
Very good. We won't do that now. Okay, very last question. Where can people find you if they want to know more about you, if they want to follow you, and so on and so forth?
So most of the stuff I put on Twitter, Twitter Joy Prink, P-R-I-N-K at the end. Personal pictures about my mountain adventures are on Instagram, and I stream regularly, so probably 2 or 3, 4 times a week on Twitch, also Joy Prink.
Cool. We'll put all the links in the description for the episode.
Thank you.
Well, Joey, thank you so much for your time and your insights. And we, I think, have arrived on time here. Is there any last thing you would like to get off your chest and say to us or our listeners before we part ways?
Thank you so much for the invitation. This was really inspiring also to discuss things which are usually not discussed and show maybe sides from successful projects, that there's so much failure behind that. And for instance, also from my personal life, hey, this might look good and nice and organized from the outside, but the reality, I mean, you can work on that and you can find tools to make a scattered life also more organized and find through such tools a good focus and purpose.
Beautiful. Well, thank you very much for sharing all that, and I'm sure we will see you somewhere very soon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joey.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Hi there, Simon here. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear here and you would like to hear more here, feel free to follow or to subscribe to the podcast on whichever platform you get your audio fix. We appreciate you, and we promise you to bring you many more insightful conversations with fantastic games industry guests from Berlin and from all over Europe. Thank you very much, and see you very soon. Bye-bye.
Hi there. Before you go, this is Florian, project manager for GamesNet Berlin Europe. If you want to stay connected to the network, find out more about upcoming events and links to other MediaNet initiatives, you can visit us at gamesnetberlin.eu and subscribe to our newsletter. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, and until next time.